Hello and welcome to the Anti Football Podcast. My name is Chris, and as always, you know, I am joined by the wonderful Harry Flynn. Couldn't get a word in edgeways last episode, but you know, hopefully we'll hear a lot more of his beautiful voice today.
Yeah, maybe.
Alright. Started sounding a bit miserable there. I mean, there is a reason for that, I'm sure. As we'll get straight into, you know, I'll let you talk because I'm sure you'll have a lot to say about this. It was Chelsea 2, West Bromwich Albion 5.
Well, we were cruising when we had 11 men, and then it all fell apart when we had 10 men. So I think it's fair to say that the nightmare at the back by Thiago Silva was the reason for us losing, to be fair. Because immediately after him getting sent off, they got two in a matter of minutes. And in the second half, we were trying to recuperate, and they managed to hit back again. Mason Mount tried to spur on a comeback, but you know, ultimately that they outnumbered us.
Mm.
And they absolutely thrashed us.
Yeah, they really took advantage of that man advantage. And I think someone who definitely had a really good game was, you know, obviously I don't want to point out the obvious, but I think Matias Pereira. I think he's definitely going to be a Premier League player next season. Probably not with West Brom, but he will definitely be a Premier League player. Obviously, getting two goals, getting two assists. It was an almost flawless game for him. I think he definitely did exploit the space in behind Reece James, who was at times defensively being caught out. And I just think, you know, you found it really hard to deal with the West Brom runners, you know. Like you say, I think, you know, obviously that man advantage didn't help. But it just felt like, you know, the West Brom players found themselves in a lot more space, you know. And again, that is probably a symptom of going down to 10 men. But, you know, West Brom, credit to them, you know, they played some good stuff once, you know, you went down to 10 men.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily agree with the fact that the second foul by Thiago Silva was worthy of a second yellow. But, you know, if he had stayed on the pitch, would it have been more because he was having a nightmare out there?
Yeah, and it was just reckless anyway, even if you don't think it was a yellow, the fact that it was already on a yellow, and you know, giving the referee the option to send him off, you know, whether you agree with the sending off or not, it was stupidly reckless.
Yeah. You can put it down to lack of match fitness or rustiness, but either way, it was terrible.
Mm.
The last time he played West Brom, he was playing walkabouts in our defence, and he gave the ball away, and we drew 2-3. So it seems like when he plays West Brom, that's not a team that he, for whatever reason, seems to get on well again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think this season it's, you know, it's definitely not been great. I mean, 32% of West Brom's goals that they've scored this season have been scored against Chelsea. And yeah, it's just like, it was an absolute shocker, really. And I think, you know, that really will impact Chelsea's chances of top four. Because, I mean, you know, you're looking at that West Brom game, it's one you've got to win. Because especially at the end of the season, you've got a really tough run in. You know, you've got West Ham, Fulham, Man City, Arsenal, Leicester and Aston Villa as the last six. So it could come down to that West Ham game being very crucial. But you definitely didn't help yourself, I will say, with this. I think, you know, and especially considering that you're still in the Champions League, you're still in the FA Cup, so you're not just focusing on the league. It's going to be a struggle if Tuchel wants to get top four, especially considering the form that West Ham find themselves in.
Agreed. I suppose we'll touch on that later on, but yeah, I mean, fate is ultimately in our hands, which is a positive we can take out of it, I guess.
Mm.
But I suppose what happened a couple of days after is a lot more promising.
What's that?
But what happened a couple of days after for Chelsea is a lot more promising and a lot more backed by usual sales.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, I just think that going down to 10 men really did kill you. Because I think that's sort of about Tuchel is, you know, the fact that he has that sort of possession style of football, you know, really makes every man count. The fact that he had a man sent off, you know, that really affected the system. And it was something that, you know, with, you know, Pereira particularly being able to get in behind, you know, it was something that, you know, it was easy to exploit, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, he has been in a similar situation where he's been losing. He lost against a team that he shouldn't have, and that was due to red cards. And that was, I believe, at the start of the season when he was at PSG. He lost to Nantes.
Nantes.
I don't know how you say it. Nantes, Nantes.
No, I think it is nonce. It's just funny.
Yeah, and I think Neymar got himself sent off. Yeah, so maybe there seems to be a disciplinary issue when it comes to PSG players.
Yeah, maybe. Well, don't know. I can't say I watched enough PSG to comment on that. But, you know, yeah, you could be right there. But, you know, yeah, it's just a case of the sending off really did hurt you. And, yeah, well, it's just a bad day at the office, really. Not really too much to read into, I guess. Especially considering the result midweek as well.
Yeah.
All right. Is there what else you're wanting to add on to this?
Not particularly. I'd rather we moved on.
Aye. Right, well, we'll move on to Leeds and Sheffield United. Again, there's not really too much to say on this, really. I mean, you know, Leeds dominated most of the ball. You know, they had the majority of the chances. It was an unlucky Jagielka goal, but I think but I think overall, the Leeds probably did deserve the win. It's just sad now, really, for Sheffield United, because under Wilder, the players were still playing for him, but it feels like they've just given up now at this point.
Well, yeah, I think then their fate is sealed, unfortunately. And, you know, what is there to play for at that point?
Well, a potential future Premier League move, you'd think.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, look at Aaron Ramsdale, for example. He earned himself a Premier League move because he was one of the only Bournemouth players who were trying.
Yeah, but if you're a goalkeeper and not trying, I don't know. That's very easy to pick out.
Yeah, but you know, you see what I mean, though. So, right.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously don't want to go down as the least point holders
in the Premier. Well, they've already beaten that, haven't they?
Yeah, but as one of them.
Yeah.
I think it's Derby 11, and then Sunderland 18.
No, Sunderland had 15, didn't they, at one point?
Oh, okay. Well, they're currently a point worse off than that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you look at the Villa side from, well, about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and they were absolutely dog shite. They got 17 points, so... Right. Jeez. And I can't remember how many Huddersfield got in that season where they went down. But I know they didn't get a lot. But yeah, I mean, you know, again, it's a good win for Leeds, who have a really hard run in. You know, for the next three games, we've got Man City, then Liverpool, and then Man United. So that's going to be a really hard run in, especially considering Leeds are fighting for anything, really. You know, the too far away from Europa League place to get that, and they're, you know, far, far away from any being in any sort of danger for relegation. So yeah, I mean, you know, they can afford to be on the beach now, I think, Leeds. And it's been a good season for them. You know, I mean, I've said it a thousand times, I think any newly promoted Premier League side, their first goal is to stay in the Premier League for that first season, and Leeds have done that comfortably.
Huddersfield got 16 points that season.
Ah, right.
As it stands, Sheffield United will go down as the second worst team in Premier League history.
Oh, right. Which is a bit harsh, because they're not. Like,
unfortunately, history books will only look at points, not performances.
Mm. Yeah.
But, yeah, speaking of Leeds, yeah. I mean, Jagielka getting an own goal, I think... When he does play, sometimes he can have worldies, like that match against United where he put on a performance of a lifetime.
Mm.
And then there's games like this where he actually costs his team the game.
Yeah. Well, I think that's just a case of his age, really. I mean, he's 38 years old. You know, he's going to be 39, you know, in the summer. So, you know, when you're that age, you're going to, you know, you still have the quality about you, because Phil Jagielka on his day was a top defender. But he's 38. Like, you're going to have clangers.
Yeah. Symptom of age. I think he's the oldest outfield player.
I think you're right there, yeah.
Season, yeah.
I think it's just Cavalero what's older than him overall, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd have to check that, but...
I think the oldest player is a City guy. He was 45.
What is that of all time? Is that?
I believe so. Yeah.
Oh, right.
Or it might be Teddy Sheringham or something like
that. Yeah.
Oldest PL player. Oh, there. Yeah, John Burridge.
Ah, right.
He played for Man City. I think it might have been. Well, yeah, you're right about the oldest player now is Woody Caballero.
Mm.
4 months older than Phil Jagielka.
Yeah.
There's not much in it.
No. I mean, yeah, especially when you consider that goalkeepers do have a far longer shelf life. It's, you know, yeah, it's pretty remarkable how Jagielka's been able to hold on for this long. But I can't see him getting another Premier League move in the summer, I'll be completely honest with you. Even if someone wanted him, I can't imagine him leaving Sheffield United.
Hmm. It was Man City in 1995. John
Byron. All right. Yeah.
He played until he was...
Wasn't he like 42 or something?
Well, he was 43 then.
All right.
48.
Fucking hell.
And he was player manager of Blythe Martins.
Yeah. Fucking hell.
Let's see what the oldest outfield player is. Teddy
what,
Sheringham.
Of all time?
Yeah,
or...
that's Teddy Sheringham.
Ah, right, yeah.
And then Ryan Giggs when he came out of retirement.
Yeah.
Kevin Phillips is on this list.
Yeah.
Strachan.
Yeah.
Brian Robson. Doesn't UC Jaskalainen's son play football?
I think I heard that. I could be mistaken.
Yeah, son Will Jaskalainen plays for Crewe.
Alright.
Anyway, back to the Leeds game.
Yeah.
Or are we moving on?
Well, I mean, there's not really too much to say, really. I mean, yeah, it's a mid-table team versus a club that's already down. I mean, yeah, we'll move on. We'll talk about the... what are your thoughts on the Leicester-Man City game? Sorry.
I think City displayed why they are set to be champions. It was a very comfortable display against a top four side. Should have been more. Which is not something we tend to be saying against about City this season.
Yeah, last season that was a constant theme that we were bringing up was the lack of quality finishing. You know, they'd end up having like 36 attempts and one goal.
Mm-hmm.
But this season they've been far more clinical.
Yeah. It wasn't a necessity because Leicester didn't provide much in the way of, chance of their own.
Mm.
Outside of maybe a couple. But, you know, maybe up against a better team, that might be something that they come to rue. But yeah, overall, very good performance by City.
Mm.
Resolute win.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Leicester do have a couple of positives coming out of this game, you know, namely Maddison and Pereira both getting 20 minutes on off the bench. You know, they've been big losses for Leicester, especially Pereira. I think he's on his day, you know, he's one of the best right backs in the league, I think Pereira. I think he's very good. Because they have been unlucky with injuries this season of Leicester. Don't get me wrong, so is every team. But, yeah, it's good news for them, anyway, to see both Pereira and Maddison coming back. And I think with them starting, or them starting to come back, you know, it should be a real incentive to kick on. I mean, obviously, their next game, you know, it's really crucial game against West Ham, you know, for the race for the top four. And then the last three games of the season, Man United, Chelsea and Spurs. Well, you know, like, so they've still got Leicester. They've still got the team above them and the three teams below them still to play. So, you know, like last season, it could come down to the wire whether they get top four or not.
Yeah. They've been odd in, you know, as of late. They're probably thankful that, you know, they got the job done earlier in the season, and it kind of pays back their, you know, lack of form at the moment. I mean, that performance against Sheffield United was a lot more of the Leicester that we're used to, and winning the FA Cup against United as well. But then they'll go and lose pretty comfortably to an Arsenal or a Man City, and it's very out of character.
Yeah, and you just think, you know, even if they'd have turned a couple of those losses into draws, you know, like you're saying, the Arsenal loss, the Leeds loss, you know, looking earlier in the season, you know, they lost at home to Fulham. You know, you just think you turn a couple of those into draws and they're almost nailed on for top four. So yeah, it's definitely going to be close, like we say, come the end of the season. Just like it was last season, I'm sure the players aren't going to want to be bottling the Champions League spots like they did last season. And yeah, as for Man City, you know, it's just, you know, another brilliant performance for them. You know, what, there's not really much that needs to be said. I will say, I've said it before, and I think this sort of re-emphasises it. I think Gabriel Jesus' best position is out on the left. I don't think it is up front.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I'd agree with that.
Yeah, I think just the way that he, plays off the shoulder, I think he's got a real intelligence for cutting inside. And I think you lose that when you play him, as that lone striker.
Yeah, it's a shame that it's taken so long to sort of figure that out. But yeah, they're going to have to look at a couple strikers in the summer because with Aguero departing.
Pep's come out and said that, City aren't necessarily going to buy a striker, but that's just a lot of bollocks, isn't it? You've got to think, they're definitely big foot. Oh, fucking hell. They're definitely big shoes to fill. Is Aguero, obviously a Man City legend.
No doubt.
Yeah, and he's definitely going to be missed for Man City, so they do need to bring in a replacement. I know, you've got all the big names being talked about as replacements. You're thinking about Haaland. I've heard Mbappe's name come up, Danny Ings, all the big names.
Danny Ings doesn't quite configure with those two.
Yeah, he does. Stop lying. Out of everyone, who would you say is probably the best fit for Man City? Out of anyone, and who would you say they're most likely to go in for in the summer?
I can't see a club getting Haaland other than Man City. He's got family roots there. They can afford him. They've got a position ready for him. He wants first team football. They've got Champions League football. They're constantly vying for the top of the Premier League. It's got to be them. I mean, he won't go to PSG because it's too easy of a league. He wants competition. He won't go to a Chelsea or a Man United, teams that haven't tasted the Premier League title in a few years now.
Yeah.
Go to. I've heard Real Madrid also in that conversation. As much as that is the sort of club he'd go to, they can't afford him.
Yeah, I mean, there's only a certain number of teams that would be able to afford him. He has got that. To be honest, completely honest with you, I can't see Haaland leaving in the summer. Especially with that 75 million euro release clause activating. What's that?
Doesn't come into effect until next season. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't come into effect until the summer of 2022. I think he'll stay a Dortmund player. Because why would you go out and spend 150 million on a Haaland this season when you could get him for half that price next season? That just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but if you don't go in for him, then someone else is going to go for him. I think there's that kind of secrecy around it. There's going to be a bidding war.
But you've got to think that, especially in this COVID transfer market, no club, no matter who it is, Man City, Chelsea, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, PSG, no club's going to want to spend 150 million euros on a player, especially, no matter how good they are, especially if they can get him for half the price the season after.
Yeah, but I think Dortmund are keen to sell because they want to get more than 75 million.
Well, yeah, but they're not going to sell for under 120 million, you'd think. I mean, look at what they were asking for Sancho.
Well, United, I think, were pissing them about too much. And I think they gave them a big number just to deter them. What was the biggest transfer this season?
This season? I've no idea. I'd have to look that up.
Was Havertz 72 million.
All right, yeah. So, we're not seeing players going for huge sums. Well, obviously they are huge sums, but we're not seeing, you know, 100 million being spent on one player like we have done the past couple of years. Right?
But I think if Man City are going to sign a centre-back from a championship club for 50 million, they're going to go in for Haaland.
Well, not when they can get him for half the price the season after. It just doesn't make financial sense.
But yeah, but they don't know that if PSG are going to get him.
Well, I'm sure if they were, if Dortmund accepted an offer for PSG from PSG, they would know about it. You know, I'm sure, especially when you consider who Haaland's agent is, he'll have his hands in all the different clubs, won't he? Well, me
well,
now.
Well, have you seen him and his dad been doing the rounds? Around Spain and England.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. I'll just say, if I was a betting man, I'd put my money on him staying at Dortmund next season, to be completely honest with you. I don't think any club would want to pay 150 million for him.
Actually, I've just remembered something, and I think I'm going to lean towards you.
Go on, what's that?
Well, I remember the agent said, is it Jorge Mendes?
No, it's Raul, isn't it?
Mina Raiola, yeah. Well, he said he wants 30 million. Haaland's dad, Alfinger, he wants 20 million. And then they want a 20 million signing fee for Haaland.
Mm.
70 million before you even get to talk to the club.
Yeah, that's what I mean, because, you know, that's what Dortmund paid, or it was somewhat similar to that, because he was so cheap from Salzburg. So I think they're just putting it out there for that £70 million, or €75 million release clause, you know, saying, oh, well, the rest of that money's wanting to go to us, do you know what I mean? So, you know, again, if you add on the 100 plus, you know, you think around 120 to 150 million that Dortmund would want. Add on that 70 million, you know, I can't see Haaland leaving.
Yeah.
Maybe if it was in 2017, but I think in a post-COVID market, I can't see that happening.
If an agent is demanding 30 million, I think there needs to be some sort of law or some sort of FIFA need to step in. Absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, 100%. They're such leeches, the modern agents, honestly. I mean, 30 million? Like, what would you even do? Like, you're not duo.
But are they technically lawyers? I don't understand what the... Because they see over the paperwork, don't they? So are they lawyers?
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know... It's not like they need
a lot of money to pay for a bloody lawyer.
Well, yeah, but not 30 million.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, I know Kevin De Bruyne, he negotiated his new Man City contract. He just signed a new 5-year deal. He negotiated that himself. He didn't have an agent.
Hmm. Well, I know someone like Kante, he takes his what he wanted as wage for from his lesser days. And whatever Chelsea offered on top of him, he sends back to France.
Mm.
I think he's got his own like youth centre or something.
Yeah. So, don't Mane have that as well?
Yeah, I'd
he imagine. Has one in Senegal.
I know. Players like Mata, they send like a percentage of their money to charity, don't they?
Yeah. Which, I mean, you would do, wouldn't you? Because, I mean, if you're earning that kind of money, you know, what are you going to spend it on? Do you know what I mean? Like,
agents aren't doing that.
Oh, no. Well, most agents are scummy, let's be honest.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Everyone who works in football says agents are the most scummy people.
I just don't understand the point in them. And I bet the footballers have got to pay them a percentage of their wage.
Oh, yeah. They'll have something in there.
Just get rid of them.
Yeah.
I reckon they're like leeches. They kind of coerce a 17-year-old kid.
Oh, yeah.
On a contract, and then it's they're stuck with them for life.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, it, like, because if you're a young kid, like, you don't know what you know, what you're signing, do you? Like,
no.
Yeah.
A lot of players have their own dad as agents, so I don't have an issue with that.
Well, yeah, because they're going to actually look out for, you know, the player, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. Although, what Alf Inga is requesting from clubs for his own son is rather ludicrous.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Especially when he's not the agent, like... anyway, we'll move on to the Arsenal-Liverpool game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, you know, Diogo Jota just came on and changed the game.
I thought he was very impressive in the international break.
Mm.
It's good to see he's back from injury because he should be their full-fledged striker.
Oh, yeah. 100%. I think whenever he's played, he has been unlucky with injuries this season, but whenever he's played, he's shone. I mean, he has a goal every 92 minutes in the league, does Jota. He's got 8 goals in 13 appearances. So whenever he plays, he does change the game. But I think the one sort of difference that was like the huge factor in this game was the fact that Fabinho was in midfield. I think... The fact that Fabinho was in midfield, it sort of, you know, it was sort of like a calming presence. It allowed Thiago to roam forward more. It allowed Kabak and Phillips that sort of level of stability. And yeah, I think it was, you know, it just offered them that sort of solidity against a pretty toothless Arsenal attack. Obviously, when we, you know, see Real Madrid exploit that back line, you know, it comes into a play. But against a weaker Arsenal team, I think that was one of the main factors, definitely.
They need to tell Arteta or whoever's next in charge needs to tell that Arsenal team to stop playing at the back because they're causing their own issues. And we keep bringing this up every week and they yet to learn.
Yeah, they just can't do it.
Yeah, simple as.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, let's be honest. If Arteta wasn't an ex-player, he'd have been sacked by now.
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at the way that Arsenal fans were having to go at Emery for getting them fifth place in a Europa League final. Like, I'm sure they'd snap your hand off for that now. Like,
it's funny how as they go through Wenger and then through Emery and then Arteta, the club's expectations are falling.
Mm. You know, yeah, they sacked Wenger because they were sick of finishing in the top four.
Can't even get top four anymore.
They can't even get top 10.
Nah, that's true.
Honestly, like, the club is in serious danger. Because from what I've seen, financially, they're not looking too healthy. They've got plenty of ageing dead wood in the squad on massive wages. You know, they're not an attractive club anymore. They were attractive in the summer when they'd won the FA Cup, and that's why they were able to get players like Partey, players like Gabriel, you know, that they were able to attract them to the club. But they're not attractive anymore. And, you know, do you think someone like Aouar, for example, is going to want to go to Arsenal? Like, they're knackered, honestly. I think, you know, for the next 2 or 3 years, we're not going to see Arsenal, you know, even get a whiff of top four. Never mind actually finishing it.
Mm. Yeah, it's rather funny.
Yeah. I mean, their best player this season is an 18-year-old. Like,
yep.
And this is Arsenal we're talking about. We're not on about, you know, West Brom or Burnley or Sheffield United. You know, this is meant to be a big club. And their best player is an 18-year-old who just came through the academy last season. Like,
do you think he's going to stay there long?
Well, I mean, I know they've got him locked down to a long-term contract, don't they?
Anything these days.
I know it doesn't mean anything, but in terms of, you know, what transfer fee they'd want for him, I'm sure Arsenal would want a lot of money for Saka. You know, gone are the days where, you know, Man City or Man United can poach like Nasri and Van Persie for cheap. Like, if I'm honest with you, I think, you know, because I can't see any foreign clubs coming in for him. If you're looking at other clubs coming in for Saka, you're looking at Man City, realistically.
They don't need another winger, though.
I know they don't need another winger, but they're really the only team I can see coming in for him. But, you know, you'd think Arsenal would be looking at over 100 million for him, potentially.
I reckon they're that type of club to sell him, though. They seem to, whenever the money's right, they seem to sell.
Mm.
Like, they sold Sanchez out of nowhere. Van Persie out of nowhere.
Yeah, but Sanchez was different. It was because he wanted to leave, and he was going to leave on a free anyway, so.
Oh, okay. Just some of the signings they've made, like Willian, they don't fit the club.
Yeah, I stuck up for the Willian signing at the time. You know, I thought on a free transfer, you know, as a squad player, he wouldn't be all that bad. But, you know, like you say, it just hasn't worked out for him. And now they're stuck with a player on high wages on a 3-year contract who's aging. Like,
How old is he? 32,
33? He's 32, I want to say.
Jeez.
Might be 33, I don't know. No, he's 32. He's 33 in the summer.
I got rid of him, to be honest.
Mm.
Someone else's problem.
Yeah. Aye. But yeah, I mean, Arsenal are in deep, deep shit. Like, because you think Odegaard's not going to want to sign there permanently.
Well, I don't think they'll be able to afford him, but no.
Well, no, even if Real wanted to sell, I don't think Odegaard would want to go there permanently. I think he's only gone there to get first-team football.
Have they bought Ceballos? Is he there on another loan?
No, he's there on another loan. And I don't think there's an option to buy.
Real Madrid is the sort of team that they need money.
Mm.
Arsenal aren't the type to, even if they wanted to buy him, because their ownership is shy. Mm. But, yeah, they'll consistently blame the managers and the players.
Mm. Yeah, I think, you know, the way that the clubs run, in terms of just transfers, I mean, because they're, I swear, haven't they, like, got rid of all of the scouts or something, and they're just working through agents now, instead of actually scouting players?
Who's this for?
For Arsenal.
Could be true, because they tend to sack staff.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you look at some of the signings that they've made, like, you know, this season, you know, you're looking at Willian, you know, they brought in Ryan on loan. Like, why? Like, you know, then the season before, obviously spending 70 million on Pepe, spending 30 million on Saliba, bringing in David Luiz, you know, it's just consistently put. The season before that, you know, spent
people defending Saliba to me without realizing that. Saint Etienne's defence with him was absolutely shit.
Mm.
And still is.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's still a prospect, you know. He's only, what, like 21, is he?
I think he's about 19, 20, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, for a defender, you've still got a good, what, like 15, 16, 17 years, right? Like, he's still got a long career ahead of him.
Yeah, but I don't see what they see. It's like, it's the equivalent of saying, oh yeah, Ampadu's got a big future, but he's struggling in the Sheffield United back line.
Yeah, I mean, when they called him, what's it, the Mbappe of centre-backs, like...
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, even going back further, you know, 18-19 was a shite season for incomings as well. Like, you know, bringing in Lichtsteiner on a free, bringing in Denis Suarez on loan, bringing in Socrates, bringing in Torreira. Like, it's just consistent bad recruitment after bad recruitment.
They like, should call Torreira.
Spending 40 million on Xhaka, 40 million on Mustafi, 20 million on Lucas Perez. Like, it's just absolutely brain dead recruitment.
I don't know who's in charge, who's their director of football, but they need sacking.
Thingy, innit? Raul Summer.
Raul something, well that narrows it down.
Yeah. Was it like Raul Sagnetti or something? I know they've just appointed a new one in January. They brought in Richard Garlick, who was the director of football at West Brom.
Okay, I mean their appointments are hardly anything.
Well, I don't know. They've brought in some good players and sold them on of West Brom. I mean, you're looking at players like Harvey Barnes, Jay Rodriguez was a brilliant recruitment in the Championship. Hal Robson-Carnew. You know, you'd think Pereira they're going to be able to sell for a profit in the summer. You know, they've brought in some decent players. Whoever Sam Johnston's another one.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think whoever made the decision to loan in Conor Gallagher is worth a shout about. He's good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Arsenal fans need to stop. I think they're focusing their energy on the wrong people. Because the managers can only do so much with what they're given. None of those players that have been signed, I reckon, are the managers' signings.
Oh, yeah. No, 100%. You can tell that it's, you know, a sort of process that's gone through, you know, multiple people at a boardroom level rather than, you know, a manager saying, right, I want, you know, a tall centre-back or an athletic midfielder, something like that. Like,
I don't understand why they don't recall Torreira. He can't, he's not even playing for, what do you call it?
Atletico.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think, don't they have an option to buy Torreira, Atletico?
Yeah, but it doesn't look like they're going to exercise it.
No, but I mean, they might have an obligation to buy.
Oh. Oh, well.
Yeah. Because I know most have an option to buy loans, but some have an obligation to buy. It might not have anything. Like, I know Lingard doesn't, for example.
There is no obligation to buy in the deal.
All right. Well, that surprises me. Yeah, so he'll probably be back at Arsenal next season, which, you know, again, I'd rather play him than someone like Xhaka, personally. But I don't know if Mikel Arteta thinks the same way. I mean, obviously he doesn't. That's why he loaned him out. Because it's not like someone like Torreira, you loan him out to develop. You loan him out to get player time and then look to sell him.
Yeah, but I don't think that would be his decision.
Yeah. What about What's his face? Thingy, David Luiz's mate. Same trim.
Hey.
Oh, what's his midfielder? French.
Oh, Guendouzi.
Yeah. Does he have an option to buy?
He's at Hertha, isn't he?
Yeah, he's on loan there. Yeah, no option to buy. So, you know, I mean, there were reports of, you know, falling out between Arteta and Guendouzi. But, you know, from what I've seen, he's been playing really well whilst in Germany. So you'd think that could be a potential option.
Have they loaned out any other players that should realistically be in their team?
I think, I mean, I know Willock and Maitland-Niles went out on loan in January.
Willock is definitely someone they should be looking at.
Yeah. Kolasinac has an option to buy, I think.
Oh, he's been awful at Schalke.
Yeah. No, it's just Saliba, Torreira, Maitland-Niles and Willock, and Kolasinac. Oh, Mavropanos. He could be back in the Arsenal defence.
God.
Apparently he's had a good season at Stuttgart.
I only know from Stuttgart their striker Kolasinac. He's been good.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say I watch Stuttgart regularly, but apparently Mavropanos has had a decent season out there.
Did you watch Austria Scotland?
No, I didn't.
Well, Kolasinac or Kolasinac, he was the player who scored.
All right.
I've forgotten what our original point was. We've kind of gone well off road here.
We're basically just having to go at Arsenal's recruitment policies, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't really want to move on now. But you know, guess we kind of have to. I mean, you'd have got good odds in the 30th minute for a Southampton win if you were to bet. So that's a positive for people who bet. Oh, this is so depressing. We played so well until going 2-0 up. We played brilliantly. You know, Peters does well to win a penalty. You know, and tucked away by Chris Wood brilliantly. Brilliant hold-up play from Wood to release Vidra for the second goal. We're playing great football. And then we just let Southampton play football. And this is the second time, you know, this is the second time in two matches that we've done this. We've gone 2-0 up, and instead of keeping his foot on the gas, we've let the other team come back into it. Luckily, it didn't bite us on the arse when we played Everton. We ended up winning that game. But against Southampton, it ended up biting us on the arse. We let them play football, and they dominated us. And the thing is, after they went 3-2 up, we started playing good football again all of a sudden. What kind of fucking logic is that? Like, oh, it's so backwards. Like, we just let them come at us and come at us and come at us. And you knew the third goal was coming. As soon as the first went in, you knew we were going to lose the game. I mean, it was a mistake from Ben Mee, which led to the second goal. But, you know, it was awful. And, you know, the third goal was just bouncing around. And, you know, it was just shy. It was just so bad.
I thought Redmond was really good.
Redmond did have a good game, yeah. Yeah, well, we let him play good football. You know, we let players like Redmond, like Walcott, like Armstrong, like Kings, we let him have the space. And, you know, it's just so depressing. Like, it's awful. You know, this was a game that we should have looked to win. Like, Southampton had only won one in the past like 10 games or something before this game. In the league, anyway. And yeah, it was just. Oh, it was so depressing watching this. Go on, what did you think as a neutral?
Well, I had a slight bias towards the Saints, but yeah, I thought the game was done and dusted at 2-0. But it seemed to have poked the bear inside Saints, and you seem to have gone to sleep and just let their wingers play, and that's the most dangerous thing you could do. The ball by Carl Walker Peters. Yeah, is that the same?
Yeah, Carl Walker Peters, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then left by, can't remember who it was, into Ings, and then the cut inside by him before scoring. I thought that was an excellent goal.
It was an excellent goal, but again,
should have been dealt
with. We just let him run. Like, he should have never been in that position to begin with.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was depressing. Yeah, I mean, I just want to move on from this personally. You know, we're going to move on to what were your thoughts on Newcastle's draw against Spurs?
Spurs should have had the game well and truly wrapped up. They had plenty of chances to do so. And I found it rather funny and ironic that an Arsenal loanee was the one to get the equaliser. Pops and Joe Willock.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. It was a great goal from Newcastle. You know, they kept on knocking on the door. And again, it was like what we said, you know, about the last game. You know, Spurs just invited the pressure, and you know, eventually they broke. And you know, I just don't understand why they did that. Like, you know, they went 1-0 down via Joel Linton, which is embarrassing enough. Then a Kane brace, you know, proving again why he's a brilliant player. But they just let Newcastle come at them and come at them and come at them and have chance after chance after chance, you know. And I don't get it, because like, they're clearly the better football team. If they'd have just gone out there and played football, they would have won. But again, it's a case of Spurs being restricted and letting the other team play football. That was their downfall against Arsenal, and it's been their downfall against Newcastle.
Yeah. I just don't understand Mourinho's tactics with this Spurs team, because it doesn't work. He doesn't have a good enough defence to absorb the pressure and play like Liverpool, where they capitalise on a break. While they are great on the break, the defensive part is what holds them back. That's what's dropping the points.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand, you know, what he's trying to get across. I mean, you know, that counter-attacking style, you know, it suits players like Kane and Son really well. But like you say, the defence just isn't good enough to play that. I mean, you're looking at that back four, you got Reguilón, Roden, Sanchez and Tanganga. Like, you know, I like Tanganga, but I don't think he suits the right back position. I think he's a born centre back. Sanchez has on and off games. Roden is still a very raw talent. I don't think he's ready for that Spurs level yet. And Reguilón, I rated him at Sevilla, but he's just not been all that this season.
He was 100% the best fullback last season in La Liga, and that's with some incredible competition. He just doesn't have that leeway to go forward at.
No.
That's what makes him, you know, the kind of player he was. He can't defend, unfortunately. He's better suited as a left wing back, and so is Matt Doherty as a wing back. They need to probably operate a 5.
Yeah, I think, you know, if Spurs were to go to a, you know, 3-5-2 or a 3-4-3, I think that would really suit this Spurs team, because, like you say, it allows the wing backs, because that's what they are, they're not full backs, they're wing backs, it'd allow them to roam forward more, get more crosses into the box. Yeah, and I think it would probably show up the defence a little bit as well. You know, but obviously Jose don't think that. And yeah, I think Spurs, you know, they're sat in sixth place at the moment. If Everton win their game in hand, they'll go above them. If Everton win the game in hand, they'll go above them. Yeah, it's just... I feel like Spurs... They're going to definitely be scrapping for Europe come the end of the season. Because they've got some tough games. You know, you're looking at United and Everton as their next two. You know, the last two games of the season, they've got Villa and Leicester. So they've definitely got some tough games. They've also got some winnable games in there. You know, you're looking at that run of Sheffield United, Leeds and Wolves. And Southampton as well, actually. You know, they should be looking at least 10 or 12 points from those, that run. But yeah, they're definitely going to have to fight hard, Spurs, for that those European places.
What's the next game?
It was Villa and Fulham. Fulham, you know, they started relatively brightly. Probably had the more chances in the first half. And ended up Mitrovic bagging a goal on the hour mark, roughly. It's been a struggle for Mitrovic this season, really, because, you know, you're looking at the last season, he was in the Premier League, you're looking at last season in the Championship, you know, he was putting in really good figures. You know, you're looking at 11 goals in the Premier League 2 years ago, you're looking at 26 goals in the Championship last season, but it's really been a struggle for him this season, only 3 goals and 3 assists in 24 games. He's not lived up to his standards in the past 2 seasons, so it was good to see him get a goal here. But you know that the Villa seemed to turn on the gas after going 1-0 down, and yeah, they ended up Trezeguet ended up bagging a brace, which, you know, is an unlikely player to bag a brace. It was an awful error for that second goal, I will say. I'm a big fan of Tosin. I think he's been very good this season. But, you know, losing possession, you know, in that area to Keenan Davis, it was just, you know, he was inviting the pressure. And it ended up, obviously, leading to the second Trezeguet goal. And Ollie Watkins gets the third, kills the game off. He's been very inconsistent this season as Watkins. He's... had games where he's looked brilliant. He's had quite a few off games where his finishing just hasn't been up to scratch. So, you know, overall, he's had a good first season in the Premier League. I mean, he's hit double figures already. But yeah, this was one of his games where he was seemed to be a lot better. But Villa, you know, again, just didn't look the same team without Jack Grealish in it. And if, you know, what Dean Smith said could be true is that Grealish could be missing until the end of the season. So, you know, that's going to be a big loss for Villa.
I mean, Fulham did dominate the majority of the game. And I found Mitrovic was replicating what I saw against Republic of Ireland for Serbia. Just a dangerous individual when he was in front of goal. It seems... he was back to his former self.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have the team around him to quite create him, you know, what he wants. He needs balls over the top that he's going to be able to latch onto and, you know, cause keeper issues. It doesn't seem they do that at Fulham.
No.
And I think the Villa combat is... it really speaks loudly of their lethality. I mean, we saw it against Liverpool when they won 7-2. Just don't have chances because they aren't going to put them away. And even without Grealish, they have got a few finishes in them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was weird to see Trezeguet bagging a goal. Like I said, he's not really been standout for singing for Villa this season. But he's still a decent little player. I won't stand here and say he's awful. I think he's just not shown his quality all that this season. But still good.
I don't quite see what that manager saw in him to name him Trezeguet from a young age. He is nothing like David Trezeguet.
Yeah.
His real name is Ahmed Hassan, I think.
Really?
Yeah. But did you think his name was actually Trezeguet?
Well, no, obviously, but I didn't know what his actual name was.
Yeah, apparently when he was in Egypt, a manager drew comparisons to David Trezeguet. I don't see it, quite frankly.
Well, I mean, he's a Premier League footballer, so yeah, it's not like he's completely useless.
That's true. You got any more games?
We'll move on to Man United and Brighton. Obviously, this game ended in controversy. The last game with Man United getting a penalty after the final whistle. In this game, Brighton, they played well, I think, but again, I just think the quality of Man United ended up being too much for them.
Yeah, unfortunately so.
Yeah. Especially Marcus Rashford as well. I think he's. I think a lot of people really underrate Rashford. I genuinely do think he's one of the top forwards in the league. Agreed. Honestly, I think his absolute quality is Rashford.
I think it's because he's being played as a left mid that you don't get to see that side of his game often.
Mm.
I don't know why they play Greenwood as a striker, because for a striker at Man United, it shouldn't take so many chances to put the ball in the back of the net. Mm-hmm. I know he's only 18, but don't put him in that position then.
Yeah, I think he's definitely far more suited, is Greenwood, to playing on either flank, because obviously he's either-footed. Mm-hmm. Defenders won't know whether he's going to cut inside or whether he's going to go to the byline and try and get a crossing. I think he's definitely well suited to play as a wide player, is Greenwood. I don't understand why they keep trying to force him up front, especially when you've got Edison Cavani, still playing well. So
he seems to be their impact player off the bench, but apart from the impact bit,
I don't know. I think Cavani's been all right this season. I mean, he's got a goal every 168 minutes, so, and most of them are minutes off of the bench, like you said.
Hmm.
For a free transfer, he's done all right.
Yeah. Was Falcao a free transfer? Oh, no, he was loan, wasn't he?
No, Falcao was a loan.
It was awful.
Yeah.
Awful for us and awful for them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was a case of looking at the World Cup and recency bias over, looking at his actual qualities as a forward.
Yeah. Is there much to talk about in this Man United game?
Not really, no, to be honest with you. Brighton played well, but Man United had the quality to see him through. I mean, it's not like, it's what you expected, really. And there's not really much to talk about in this next game either, to be quite honest with you. We'll probably won't spend too much time on it. Everton and Crystal Palace. Again, Everton had the lion's share of possession, the lion's share of the chances, but they couldn't kill off Palace. And eventually, Batshuayi, an unlikely goal scorer, bags the equaliser, and Palace managed to get a point.
Yeah, Everton were playing Vengerball. They were trying to walk it in. They missed many. Well, I think they missed two or three one-on-ones with the keeper, which, with the kind of strikers that they've got, they should really be putting them away.
Mm.
I think at one point, Richarlison had two attempts at a one-on-one. One of which hit the keeper and came back at to him. And he just shot it straight at the keeper again. It was just...
Yeah.
But they did eventually find their way through. That was James. Past the post.
Yeah. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, he's going to be a big miss next season. Is James Rodriguez obviously going to play in the women's team? But yeah, like, he's.
What?
Have you not heard that?
No.
Oh, yeah, what? Like, about a month ago or something, there was this rumour going around that James Rodriguez wasn't really injured. He was getting gender transition surgery or whatever it's called, because he was going to play in the women's team.
Gender retirement.
Yeah, yeah, that.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, it was, came out of a WhatsApp group and a lot of people actually believed it. It's jokes.
Okay.
But yeah, like you say, I do think Hammers is a quality player, though. He was definitely a good pickup for Everton. I mean, and he was cheap as well, wasn't he?
He was on a free, I think.
Oh, I thought he was like 15 million or something.
Well, his youth club claimed that they didn't receive any money. And they were meant to, so...
Oh, right.
Belgrano, I think the name was.
Mm.
Or Belgravia Centre, I don't know.
Oh, right.
It's not Belgravia Centre, do you know what that is?
To be honest with you, I wasn't really listening to you. What are you, what did you say?
I said Belgravia Centre.
Oh, right.
I think...
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't that funny.
Oh. Well, the actual club is called Belgrano.
Oh, right.
I think.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they were meant to receive a portion of whatever the sell-on fee was.
Oh, yeah. Well, a lot of them do have that. But it wouldn't have been much anyway. It would have been like probably 1%.
Yeah, it would have been a lot for them. I think what James did was he donated his first week's wage.
Which probably would have covered it, let's be honest.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there's not really too much to talk about. So we'll move on to a game which was a lot more entertaining from a neutral standpoint, I will say. West Ham 3, Wolves 2. What were your thoughts on this?
Very entertaining from a neutral standpoint. I think what West Ham deserved win on 3. I think it was the Lingard show, and he definitely deserved. I don't know, Wolves made more of a game of it. It was end-to-end, but I think West Ham deserved more than 3.
Oh.
And the fact it finished 3-2, I think that it does, it flatters them, I think.
Oh. Yeah, and I think, you know, again, it was a case of West Ham going 3-0 up, and, you know, they almost bottled it like they did against Arsenal.
Yeah, you know,
3-0 seems to be a very dangerous scoreline for West Ham, you know. But, you know, that victory moves them up to fourth. It takes them above Chelsea. And West Ham, you know, if you'd have told me last season that West Ham would have 8 games to go, would be in the top four, and I thought you were... You know, I thought you were mental. I think David Moyes has to be manager of the season for me. I think, you know, what he's done with this West Ham team, you know, he's probably the biggest overachievers this season. Yeah, I think he definitely deserves manager of the season for what he's done with this West Ham team, even if they don't qualify for the top four. Which, you know, is a real possibility considering, you know, they've got quite a few favourable fixtures of West Ham. You know, they've got Newcastle, Burnley, Brighton, West Brom and Southampton all still to play.
I mean, I think I said last time I'd just give a blank check to Moyes to sign whatever players he wants because, like you said, they've been overachieving.
Mm.
They're definitely going to need it if they're going to be getting Europe because the squad's too thin.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, because I mean, this is the first time we'll have seen him in Europe since what? Was it 2015, 2016 when they got the Europa League? I think they went out in the qualifiers, though, didn't they? So it'll be interesting to see West Ham in the Champions League. You know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, Mark Noble absolutely snapping Cristiano Ronaldo at the. But yeah, you know, it's definitely looking healthy for West Ham. We'll move into the Champions League. I mean, yeah. Is there any game you want to go into first?
Bayern PSG.
Yeah, that was a very entertaining watch for the neutral, I will say. Yeah, it just felt like Bayern. They didn't seem like they were at the races, even though they did score two. You know, it felt like, you know, that early Mbappe goal kind of knocked them for six a bit. You know, the high line was exploited by Mbappe. Well, not only Mbappe, but also Neymar as well. And yeah, it just, you know, it was a very entertaining watch from a neutral perspective, I will say. There was a lot of injuries. And yeah, like very end-to-end stuff.
Mm-hmm. I think what let Bayern down, which is very uncharacteristic of them, is not only their finishing, but their defending. I mean, they conceded four chances, conceded three goals. I know Mbappe's absolute world class, but
yeah, that first goal should have never beaten Neuer.
No.
And it's weird because Neuer's been brilliant this season. But, you know, he definitely dropped a howler there.
I mean, that goal where he was one-on-one with Boateng and Mbappe and then sticks it through his legs past the keeper, that was incredible.
Mm.
The ingenuity by this 22-year-old is, like, well beyond his years. It's incredible.
Oh, yeah, 100%. You know, I think that, you know, he just seems so mature beyond his years, does Mbappe. He's genuinely world-class, honestly. And it's just scary to think about what he's going to be like in 3 or 4 years' time.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't even his peak, which is incredible.
Exactly, you know what I mean? I know it's Ligue 1, but 26 goal contributions in 26 games, like, you know, he is so good, honestly.
Yeah, he's a god amongst men.
Mm. Yeah, I think sort of Haaland's emergence has sort of taken the shine off of Mbappe a little bit. You know, there's not as much attention being thrown on him as there was, you know, 12 months ago. But he is still, you know, one of the best in the world at the moment. Never mind, you know, one of the best young players.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I was talking about this on Twitter earlier, that with their rise, it takes the shine off of the upcoming El Clasico because we're seeing the end of an era with Messi and Ronaldo.
Mm. Yeah, that was a lot of the appeal of El Clasicos of 3 or 4 years ago. We're seeing Messi going up against Ronaldo. I think once Ronaldo left, I think there was a significant dip in interest from at least a foreign perspective on El Clasico.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the future is going to basically be Vinicius versus Fatty, which isn't particularly the same kind of zest as Ronaldo Messi.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%. And that's if Fatty can recover from his, setback, which, could be, career ending, apparently.
Really? Okay.
That's what I heard, anyway.
Jesus. Okay, I did not know that.
Mm.
What was he, 19? Fucking hell.
Mm. Going forward as well, Bayern really missed Robert Lewandowski, as you would miss a player of that quality. They created so many chances. And whilst Areola, not Areola, sorry, Keylor Navas, whilst Keylor Navas had a brilliant game, Bayern could have easily had 4 or 5 and probably should have. Yeah, it was very poor up front. I think particularly Sané as well. Nothing, everything he tried to do, nothing came off.
Yeah, I found he was quite greedy in that game.
Mm.
There were times where he should have passed and he went out wide for himself to try and, find some space out of nothing.
Yeah.
Never going to happen.
Mm.
You can see they missed Gnabry, definitely missed Lewandowski, because the chances that came to Choupo-Moting, if they came to Lewandowski, he would have got a hat-trick in that game.
Oh yeah, 100%.
That being said, Choupo-Moting was at the helm of some of the chance creation for other players. If it wasn't for him, some of the other goals wouldn't have been scored.
Yeah, that's true. I think he must really hate PSG between the goal he scored, the chances he created, and that half a yard miss that he had for PSG. It just makes me laugh, his career trajectory, going from getting relegated with Stoke to going to PSG to going to Bayern Munich. Like, that just makes me laugh. And it's not like he were a young kid either, so.
No.
It's weird.
It wasn't anything special at Schalke for him to even earn a move to Premier League. So, his career is just an anomaly in itself.
Yeah. It must be doing somewhat right, whether obviously not on the pitch, but like off the pitch, must be like a positive influence or something for him to keep getting these moves. Either that or he has the best agent in the world. It was definitely a good game. PSG obviously getting 3 away goals. It's going to be tough for Bayern Munich on, when they go to the... I'm assuming they'll be going to the Parc des Princes. It'll be tough for them to overcome this deficit. They're going to have to win by 2, you'd assume. And Pochettino's tactics really, shut down this Bayern team.
They only change venues when an English team's involved, because most countries don't want an English team in their country.
Mm.
So, for example, Chelsea versus Porto, both games being played in Seville.
Yeah. Which I don't understand, because we're probably doing better than quite a few European countries, but that's neither here or there.
It's not like we got fans with us.
Yeah, exactly.
And all the players have to be COVID negative.
Yeah. And what I don't get? How come if they've both been played in neutral venues, how come away goals still count?
Well, I suppose someone has to get the home dressing room, don't they?
Yeah, but that don't make any sort of difference at all.
What, have you seen away dressing rooms?
Yeah, but like, you know,
they're shitholes.
Yeah, but you're staying there for what, like an hour at most, like.
Yeah, I know.
That's just, you know. No, I don't get how, you know, if someone went out on away goals in a neutral stadium, that's just, that's all the bollocks are.
Yeah, I agree. I suppose, what, yeah.
Aye.
Extra time and penalties, because I'm not sure, because none of the games have really gone to that yet.
Mm.
Do they do all that?
I'd assume they would do, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because the thingy did, didn't it? Porto and Juventus.
Oh, yeah, of course. That was an excellent game.
Mm.
Best of all time. Seriously?
What? The best game of all time?
It's up there for me.
Mm. All right, well, all right. I won't mock your beliefs.
What would you say is the best game you've ever seen?
Oh, what would it be? Try to think. When we beat Crystal Palace 3-2, it's the best game I've ever seen.
Really?
Yeah. But it's the best game I've seen live, at least.
What about as a neutral?
I can't think of any as a neutral, to be completely honest with you. Maybe the Spurs second leg against Ajax.
Oh, that was heartbreaking.
Yeah,
that's a fair shout. Another shout for me would be Watford-Leicester.
Yes. Well, I mean, I haven't watched the actual game back, like, for ages. It's just that moment at the end.
Yeah, but it was a good game.
Yeah. I mean, Knockout was a diving bastard as well. Like, he deserved that miss. But yeah, I mean, there's another game we want to move on to. I mean, are we going to go to the Real Madrid and Liverpool game?
Yeah, just a collection of errors from the bat, the defence of Liverpool.
Aye, I mean, Vinicius Jr. absolutely tore Trent's arsehole wide open. And that could be the final nail in his Euro hopes for Trent. You know, after being not included in the most recent England squad.
And even prior to that game, I wouldn't have picked him.
Mm.
I mean, he's given the ball away the most times this season.
Yeah. And I mean, this could end up being the final nail in the coffin. I think between him and both Keita before he came off and Wijnaldum, there were plenty of Liverpool players who were just passengers.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just, you know.
Yeah.
It was just very poor from Liverpool. There didn't seem to be that sort of intensity that, you know, is a staple of Liverpool and the Klopp. What are you saying?
You can definitely see they're knackered.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I think Klopp has got to go because he's going to end up getting sacked. And I don't think that's going to look well on his record. I don't think that's a good way to end his tenure.
No, he's not going to get sacked.
Well, yeah, you can't. I doubt they're going to make many signings in the summer. And this team is struggling.
Yeah, but getting Van Dijk back is as good as a signing, isn't it?
That's true.
Yeah, you've got to think once Van Dijk comes back, once Gomez comes back, you know, they're a completely different team. I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, I'm not going to, you know, be a typical Liverpool fan and bang on about all injuries, because everyone's had injuries. But, you know, Van Dijk was the best defender in the world at the time of his injury. So, you know, he's going to be a big loss for him. And getting him back, you know, that could be the difference between, you know, two or three places. Do you honestly think if Liverpool had Van Dijk, that they would be in the position that they are, that they'd be finishing, you know, below West Ham or Chelsea or Spurs?
Well, he would have been knackered as well.
Well, yeah, he would have been knackered, but he would have been better than Reece Williams.
Yeah. I think there's going to be far more injuries next season due to his play style. Mm.
Yeah. Well, it depends, you know, how the summer break, you know, how much good that does to the players, you know.
They're not going to get a break. It's going to be Euros.
Well, aye, true. Salah and Mane will get a break. And Firmino.
Isn't it African Cup of Nations?
No, that's during the winter, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Aye, so, you know, like Fabinho, Firmino, Salah, Mane. You know, they're going to be getting breaks. You know, Alisson's another one. Keita as well. He's not European, is he?
No, he's Senegalese, I want to say.
Yeah. Well, he's not going to Euros. So quite a few of those players you'd think would be getting a break. Matip as well. He's another one. So a lot of them will be getting long breaks.
Yeah, but don't they? No friendlies and things, don't they?
Well, yeah, true, but it's not at the same sort of level of intensity, is it?
True.
I do definitely think we'll see a resurgence in Liverpool next season. You know, whether they are challenging for the title or not, you know, I'm still doubtful on that.
I think that's going to happen once Klopp's in charge. He runs them ragged.
Mm. Yeah. Well, you know, we'll wait and see. I think next season's definitely going to be interesting as well. You know, we'll see the aftermath of the COVID markets for a bit. You know, it'll be interesting, we'll say. I mean, you know, got the other Champions League games. You can give us your thoughts on Chelsea and Porto.
Straightforward victory. I think that Porto did dominate the ball, but the chances that they did create weren't much to be, you know, I don't think they were, you know, too dangerous. It just seemed to be a lapse of concentration at the back. Chilwell capitalised on it and did like a Messi-esque goal.
Mm.
Then you had Mountie scoring. Yeah, I think we just capitalised at the correct time.
Mm.
Whilst they were weak, and I think that's something that Juve didn't do. Juve let them sit back and defend.
Mm.
And they were able to harness their energy for the counter attacks.
Mm.
Instead we were letting them run the show.
Mm. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and I think that's almost you'd think that'd be the tie over and done with. You can't see Porto. I mean, obviously it's in a neutral venue, isn't it? But I can't see Porto scoring two against Chelsea in the second leg. So you'd think that's Chelsea through to the semi-finals.
Rules, we have two away goals.
Yeah, exactly. They'd have to score three. Looks like Chelsea's probably going to be through to the semi-finals. Which is a real shock. It's just come out of nowhere, really. Because, I mean, you'd only be three games away from winning the Champions League then, which is absolutely mental to think about, considering, you know, you look back to 3 or 4 months ago and you were bottom half of the Premier League.
That wasn't even in my head, the Champions League, when we had Frank. It was more so know, surviving the Prem, making sure that we made Europa League.
Oh, I thought you meant surviving relegation.
No. We might have had to. Frank Stadium. Stand people saying, oh, he went too soon, when he literally had the worst win rate under Abramovich.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was afforded far more time than someone like Sarri was given. You know, once Conte started to turn, you know, he was disposed of pretty quickly. So, you know, I think out of all of the most recent Chelsea managers, I don't think you can accuse Frank Lampard of not being given enough time out of any of them. I mean, don't get me wrong, that is something that Chelsea is known for, is frequently sacking managers, but I think, you know, the sacking of Lampard was justified, especially when you consider Tuchel was there for the taking, you know, and you don't know how long he would have been available for.
Yeah, that was definitely it. I mean, another club could have got him and reaped the successes that we can't now. What was the other game?
Man City and Dortmund. And the only thing I can remember from that was the Edison dive, which cost Jude Bellingham, you know, one of the best moments of his career.
Yeah, that was bullshit.
You know, as a teenager, scoring in the Champions League quarterfinals against, you know, a club from your home country, like, you know, that would have been such a good moment for him. And it would have been an away goal as well. Like, and that it was just completely ruled out over nothing. I cannot believe he was booked for that.
The ref was awful in this game. He gave a penalty that was never a penalty in a million years. Luckily, VAR did turn that over.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's some good for VAR coming out of it. Man City got a last-minute winner. It was a long time coming because they weren't looking at it at all. I did question some of the players that Terzic fielded over others. But he had, I can't remember who was sitting deep, but it should have been,
Emre Can won it.
Yeah, he was awful in that game.
Yeah.
He cost the tie, I think.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Dortmund's still in it. I mean, they do have the away goal, so they only need to win 1-0. Yeah. But yeah, it surprised me as well that, is it Nauf? Naf?
Oh, yeah.
It surprised me that he was starting, you know, over someone like Brandt or Thorgan Hazard, or even like Giovanni Reyna. I mean, you know, I can't say I follow Dortmund, you know, regularly. But, you know, I can't say I know Nauf as a regular starter for Dortmund.
He's not. He's only had a few appearances. So it really was out of the blue to me. Especially over someone like Thorgan Hazard.
Yeah. Or even, you know, Giovanni Reyna. Whenever I've seen him, I've been impressed by him. And he seems like he's getting regular game time as well. So, yeah, it's quite, you know, I didn't really see that coming as well. But, yeah, Dortmund are definitely still in this. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see the second leg. Because, you know, obviously Man City's still in the FA Cup as well. They've got that, you know, only 3 days after. You know, it'll be interesting to see what kind of team they field, what, you know, their focus will be on. Because, you know, again, it feels like a really good chance for City to win the Champions League. But I don't know if they're going to do it. Because Pep wants to win everything. He loves the League Cup more than he loves his own kids. Like,
I mean, I can't fault him for wanting, for having that kind of optimism and that kind of ambition.
Well, I can understand it, but at the same time, like, that's the reason why he hasn't won a Champions League. It's because he focuses on the League Cup. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of the League Cup and the FA Cup, but you've won them multiple times, like...
But, you know,
and it's not like he doesn't have the players to rotate.
Oh yeah, he definitely has players, yeah. But it's, you know, how many teams can say, oh yeah, I won the quadruple?
Yeah. Well, how many teams can say they won the Champions League full stop? Like,
yeah. He'll do it with City, whether it be this season or next season, he'll do it. I mean, he's got the league wrapped up, so perhaps he can afford to rotate there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you'd think so. I mean, he only needs, what, like, 3 or 4 more wins, and then it's mathematically done.
Or some Man United losses.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see, because I think, you know, the second leg, no matter who it is, whether it is Bayern Munich or PSG, that will be a tough test if Man City can get past Dortmund. Because let's not rule out Dortmund as well. You know, with Haaland up front, you know, you never know what's going to happen with them.
Oh, yeah, speaking of Dortmund, I just remember this. They had they played Köln at the weekend, and they were away.
Yeah.
Everyone was on the bus except for Mats Hummels, so they left him in Köln alone. No one knows he was missing.
Yeah, that is kind of bad, you know. Like, acting like, you know, fucking primary school kids, you need to take a register, right? Yeah. Are Cologne, like, doing awful this season?
Yeah.
Shame. Yeah, I think that's basically it, unless there's all else you're wanting to add on.
Boob monkey.
And that's the perfect place to end it. Have you got all you're wanting to plug?
I'll plug my Twitter at HazardChelseaFC.
Right, and I'll plug mine at IWGPCrispyFC, and you can follow the podcast at AntiFootballPod. I'll try and post more frequently on there because I haven't been. Yeah, and that is it from us, and we'll speak to you later. I don't know. I hate outro.